The Daily Power Parsha. It's great to have you guys. This is Wednesday. So we're going to cover today primarily reading number 4, but we are going to go back to reading number 3 in our Torah portion, which is Vayetze. So let's figure out. I love how I'm right in the target of the cars. Can somebody, can we just acknowledge that my table, one second guys, I am like right in the parking lot. And there's cars that are literally right behind me. This is fantastic. Okay, so, huh? I can move closer. Because I'm like very obedient. I sit down where the table is. But I do think that I'm going to shimmy on over. That's fine. Shimmy. There we go. It's fine. I don't mind. Okay, so let's jump in. It's Vayetze. You can find it in your Chumash. Todos Vayetze. 180 begins, but we are up to now page 191. Page 191 and online. Matt, it's great to have you here. I'm going to share my screen and pull it up for all y'all. This is still reading number 3. Reading number 3. We're finishing off reading number 3. So I'm going to give you the short version of where we're up to in this Torah portion and in the story. So Jacob left home. He left home to escape the ire and the wrath of his brother Esau. And he also left home to find a wife. And he was sent back to his family's mishpacha back in Haran, back to his uncle. Shalom. Shalom, my friend. All right. Hey, we're on the Beltline, so we always get some shout-outs. So he goes to Haran, and he's trying to meet up with his uncle. Well, he's by the well, and there the well has a cover on top of the well, and all the shepherds are gathered with their flocks, and no one's drinking, and he's asking what's going on. Why is there no action happening here? Why aren't you giving the animals to drink and moving on? So, well, because the stone is so heavy, you have to wait for everybody to come, and then we can roll off the stone, and then we can all give the animals to drink, and then we move on with our day. So at that point, he sees Rachel, who was his cousin, his uncle's daughter, who came with her sheep, and he was so inspired, so smitten with her, that he himself, although it took usually a collaborative effort of many, many different shepherds to remove the stone, he single-handedly takes off the stone from the well, and he is the hero. Talk about chivalry. Chivalry is not dead as of 3,400 years ago. Chivalry was, and maybe still is, very much alive. So that is what he does. And they fall in love, and he wants to marry her, and he goes to her father, who's his uncle, and he says to Laban, I want to marry her. And they agree that he would work for 7 years for Laban, for his uncle, and future father-in-law-to-be in order to get permission to marry the daughter. And so it is, after 7 years, they set the date for the wedding. We did this all yesterday. They set the date for the wedding. And at the wedding, of course, as you know, he thinks he's marrying Rachel. The old switcheroo happens, and he ends up marrying Leah. Look at that. He doesn't find out till the next morning. Too late, they're already married. So what does the Torah tell us? That he turns around and marries and goes to Laban. He says, what'd you do? Laban says, well, we always give the older daughter before the younger daughter. He agreed to give the younger daughter first, but he's Laban. So of course he agreed. It doesn't matter what he said. It's what he's doing. Fine. So then what happens is he says, okay, but Jacob says, I still want to marry Rachel. So Laban says, all right, but you have to work for me another 7 years. But this time, you don't have to wait 7 years, just wait a week after Sheva Brachot, and then you'll marry Rachel, and then you'll work 7 years, and then we're good. We're good with this arrangement. Jacob says, fine, it's a deal. So I want to mention a few things. All this we explored yesterday, but I need to mention a few things. Number one, what's this business of waiting 7 days before marrying the next sister? Why 7 days? I mentioned in passing yesterday that this is one of the sources that we have for the idea of Sheva Brachot, 7 days of celebration following a Jewish wedding. And in that 7 days of celebration, we focus exclusively on the couple. In fact, it's so interesting. For that time period, the bride and groom are considered halakhically to be on a very high spiritual level and a very high status level, akin to a king and a queen. So if the groom, for example, walks into a minyan, there's no tachnun set at that minyan. You know, Tachlin, like the prayer that you ask forgiveness for your sins? When on a holiday, on Shabbat, we don't have to ask for forgiveness because it's such a holy day that we're not about, you know, it's not about asking for penitence and these types of forgiveness prayers. When a groom walks into a minyan, within the 7 days after the wedding, there's no Tachlin. It's a holy experience. It's a holy minyan, which is why in Crown Heights, if you go to 770, which is the main shul, there are always weddings in Crown Heights, right? So if you go to a shul, odds are you're not going to say Tachlin because there's some groom, someone there has recently got married, and you have Tachlin off that day, which is always an extra bonus. After 7 days. Well, after 7 days, life, that's it. No, listen. There was once your question was once asked by a groom to be to his rabbi. So what happens after the 7 days, you know? So the rabbi says, as long as you treat your wife like a queen, you're considered to be a king. But the minyan will still say Tachlin. So on that level, it really is 7 days for the celebration and for that custom. But here's the point. In those 7 days, the bride and groom, whenever they walk outside, the custom is that they should be escorted by others. They shouldn't walk alone, because a king and a queen, they always have an entourage. So they have an entourage for, it's called shomer, somebody to watch them or to escort them. And the focus is exclusively on their celebration. And there's a concept in halacha, in Jewish law, called Eima Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. We don't mix two. So, that's fine. We don't mix two. It's not bothering me. I'm just looking at you. We don't mix two celebrations together, right? We don't dance in someone else's parade, or we don't mix in to someone else's celebration, which is why they waited 7 days for the second wedding. Because if they got married before the 7 days, it means that you're mixing a new wedding into the celebration from the previous wedding. And we don't do that. You don't set up one chuppah and have two weddings, you know, that step on each other's feet, so to speak. So that's kind of the rule of thumb. So that's why he said, we'll wait 7 days, and then I'll marry the other sister. Hey, Sandrine. Okay. But what's the business about marrying two sisters? We know that halachically that's forbidden. So if the patriarchs, including Jacob, if they respected Torah law even before it was given, because, you know, they kind of knew, they kind of intuited what it was going to be, if that's the case, then how do you marry two sisters? Just as an aside, having two wives is theoretically, biblically permitted. Rabbinically, it's prohibited. That's been the custom for the last while, that it's that there's a prohibition on that. But biblically, it's permitted, but not two sisters. Not two sisters. It's considered to be one of the forbidden relationships. In the book of Leviticus, it lists all the different types of forbidden relationships, incestuous relationships, etc. And one of them is marrying two sisters. So how did Jacob do it? All the commentaries wonder. I want to give you two answers. One is a technical answer on a technicality, and one is a bit of a deeper answer. On a technical level, look, I'll give you three answers. You ready? Answer number one, this is the easiest answer. Answer number one is, it was before the Torah was formally given at Sinai. So therefore it wasn't binding. So yeah, best practice was to keep as much as you could, but two sisters, he married two sisters. That's one answer. I don't know if I'm crazy about that answer, but that's one answer. Another answer is that the sisters, each of them, converted to Judaism. Because although there wasn't, you know, maybe post-Sinai Judaism the way we know it today, but there was some sort of form of the Abrahamic, you know, monotheistic faith. And each one converted, you know, when they married in to Jacob, they accepted that reality. Jewish law says that when someone converts to Judaism, they have a new family identity. It's like they're reborn, so to speak, a new birth. Which means that if Leah married the first, right, the older daughter got married first. If Leah marries Jacob, so she officially accepts and embraces the faith, and now she is officially, let's say, that status of a convert to Judaism, which means that she now is like reborn, right? And it's a born again, that's something else. But it's like a rebirth, or it's like a birth, it's like a new identity, which means that she loses her familial bond with her sister. Are you with me? And then when her sister converts, she also becomes a new person. Anyway, the bottom line is that on a halachic technicality, we could say that although they were sisters, halachically they didn't have the status of sisters because each one converted. They converted from paganism. They grew up with Laban. Laban had idols. They grew up in, Rachel stole the idols. Remember, it's further in the story. But when they leave eventually after all those years together with all the kids, Rachel takes the idols, puts them under the saddle. Remember that story? Laban, they grew up with idol worship. 100% they had, it's from Abraham's family, it's her uncle. But Rebecca was also born into idolatry. Everyone was worshiping idols. It wasn't a chiddush. It wasn't like something like far-fetched. The far-fetched, the novelty was, if you weren't serving idols, if you were monotheistic. So they converted. Again, it wasn't post-Sinai Judaism, but it was some semblance of the Abrahamic monotheistic faith.
Post-Sinai Judaism was when Judaism became
official.
So until at this point, there's no Judaism automatic upon birth.
Good question. In other words, so good. Don is asking the question, was there even a concept of, you know, being Jewish upon birth, or was it merely what you accepted? Was everyone based on acceptance? That's a really good question. I don't know. That's a very good question. Say it again. So I don't know what they consider. They definitely didn't have the term Jew or Jewish. The question is if they had the term, you know, Abrahamic faith, which I think they did. They accepted monotheism. They accepted monotheism. So even if it's not what we...
They could have multiple things. It was monotheism, but these all represented the same higher power.
So here's the deal. Abraham was monotheistic, Isaac was monotheistic, and Jacob was monotheistic. Rachel and Leah, Rachel and Leah grew up not monotheistic. When they married Jacob, they embraced monotheism, and at that point, some commentaries say they had the status, pre-Sinai status of converting to that monotheistic faith, and upon which conversion they became a new entity, newly born. Therefore, they lost on a certain halachic status their association with their previous family, i.e., their sister, and therefore it wasn't like he married two sisters; he married two individuals.
They weren't held to the same standards, and they weren't Jewish.
The question is about Jacob. If Jacob was trying to live true to Judaism and true to Torah, how does he marry two sisters? The question is, the assumption of the question is that he was observing Torah to the best of his ability. The question is, if that's the case, how does he marry two sisters? If we don't accept that, then there's no... The answer is there was some form of Torah. Our sages tell us that they studied Torah, they fulfilled a mitzvot, they observed as much as they could in their own way. We actually had a Torah studies class about this a few weeks ago, about what exact form that took on, which we can't repeat the whole thing now, but the point is that there was a form of Jewish observance that they were doing. When I say Jewish, what we observe today, at least the spirit of that. So the core question is, how did he marry two sisters? One answer is, it was before Sinai, so it wasn't binding. Okay, that's one answer. The second answer is, they converted the two sisters, therefore they became newly born, if you will, and newly born without that family, the pre-existing family bond. In other words, creating new family, so to speak. Here's the third answer. This is the Rebbe's answer. And it's a really beautiful idea. The patriarchs, or Jacob's acceptance of Torah values, was an extra stringency. He was not required to accept Torah values at that time because it was pre-Sinai. So anything that he did that we would call Jewish, anything that he did Jewishly, right, and I use air quotes, he did of his own volition, of his own choice, as an extra custom. But what he did promise was that he was going to marry Rachel. So now we have a promise versus an extra frumkeit, an extra stringency. A promise is a pledge. You have to live up to your word. So he had promised Rachel he's going to marry her. He ends up marrying Leah because he was duped into it. So what should he do? Should divorce Leah? It's not nice. Should he not marry Rachel? He promised he's going to marry her. But what's in the way? Some extra stringency that's not binding of Torah that he had, you know, personally committed. So the message is, don't put your frumkeit, don't put your like extra piety before basic menschlichkeit. They tell a story, basic, you know, being a mensch and doing what's right and what your obligation is. I'm not saying don't put Jewish halacha. I didn't say that. I said don't put your extra stringency on top of what the law is in front of basic decency. And this marrying Rachel after they had an agreement and they had an understanding, to marry Rachel or to leave her hanging would not be acting like a mensch. It would not be what's right. Does that make sense what I'm saying? This is the Rebbe's insight on it. To give you a story along these lines, I forget which rabbi they say about this, maybe the Chafetz Chaim, whenever he washed his hands, let's say for bread, he used a lot of water to make sure that it really covered the hands. You know, you're supposed to pour two or three times over one hand, two or three times over the other hand. He had a custom that when he poured the water on his hands for the ritual washing, he used a lot of water to make sure that was his like extra stringency. One time, he came to a guest's home and he was eating the meal there, and somebody saw that he used only a little bit of water. They said to him afterwards, "Why'd you only use a little water?" He said, "Because it's not my house. If it's on someone else's account, I can't be frum, I can't be like extra pious and extra strict on someone else's account. That's not right. That's not being pious, that's being obnoxious at that point." Right? So we have to be careful, as pious and as holy as we want to be, not to become obnoxious in the process. So the Torah is teaching us first and foremost about the value of being a mensch. And again, when it comes to the law, that's one thing. But if you're going beyond the letter of the law because you want to, right? Jacob doesn't have to keep Torah yet. He wants to go above, beyond. Great. But don't hurt someone in the process. Don't hurt Rachel. Don't hurt Leah. Does that make sense?
So, I hope it makes sense. Yeah. Concept, were they within Abraham? Is that where they were?
There was some form of Torah that they were actually studying also. There was a document that they were studying. There was a document. It says Abraham studied in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. He studied in the yeshiva. There were definitely texts, there were definitely teachings, some sort of inspirational, spiritual form of Torah that they were studying. What exactly did it look like? There's no way I can say for sure. But something they were studying. It says from the times of Abraham, they did not stop studying Torah. It says when Jacob moves down to Egypt to reunite with Joseph, he sends Yehuda to open up a yeshiva. Yeshiva of what? Yeshiva of pyramid building, pyramid schemes. No, yeshiva of Torah learning. First pyramid scheme in history is Pharaoh. Anyway, you with me? Are anybody online with questions or comments on what I just shared? Again, we addressed the question, how could he marry two sisters? Three answers. Make sense? All right, feel free to jump in, unmute, jump right in.
I've got something.
Yeah.
Because it occurred to me, before you mentioned what the Rebbe said, that Jacob had contracted to marry Rachel.
Right.
And while he was tricked, he still had that contract that he was going to marry.
That's essentially what the Rebbe says. He had a con. He had an agreement.
Yeah.
So he would violate his agreement. Because of what? Because he is deciding to keep Torah before it's actually binding and given to him. You can't put that in front of your agreement. And plus, it's hurting her. It's not nice. All right. Good. Let's continue inside. So we are up to... We're up to verse now 31. Here we go. Verse 31, middle of page 191. On the screen, I have it right here. I just highlighted the text. I'm going to read it from the Chumash that I have, the Gutnik edition that I have in front of me, but it's pretty much going to line up. I mean, usually it's pretty close to what we have online as well. All right, so now we talk about the birth of the 12 tribes, the birth of Jacob's children. So, just to recap, he marries Leah, he marries Rachel, each of them has their own handmaid, which will come into play soon, as you'll see. God saw that Leah was hated. Why was she hated? Hate is a strong term. Let's put it this way. Jacob fell in love. Who was his first love? His first love was Rachel. He was tricked into marrying Leah, but his first love was Rachel. So God saw that Leah was hated. And so God opened her womb. Rachel, on the other hand, was barren. So here we have an interesting plot twist. That Rachel, who he originally loved, who he wanted to marry, she cannot have children. And Leah, the one who he didn't want to marry, she can have children. If you want to know a Kabbalistic insight on this, just cue up lesson 4 of Secrets of the Bible, last week's class, where we spoke about that at length. All right, let's continue verse 32. Leah became pregnant and she gave birth to a son. She named him Reuven, or Reuben, because she said she named him after a sandwich. Unbelievable. Joking. She named him Reuben. Why? Because she said, for God has seen my affliction be'ani, since now my husband will love me. Basically, she said, God has seen my sorrow, or seen my pain, seen my affliction, now that I have a child. So Rachel, my sister, doesn't have a child. I have a child, so now my husband will finally love me. It's kind of heartbreaking, you know? And also a lot of messaging to carry if you're the kid, right? There's a lot of energy in that name right there. But it continues. We got more where that came from. Verse 33, and she conceived again and bore a son and gave birth to a son. She said, since God has heard, Shema, that I am hated, he gave me this one too. And he named the second son Shimon, or Simeon. So we have Reuven, which means God has seen my affliction. Shimon, God has heard that I am hated. So that's why she names the second son Shimon or Simeon. Next, verse 34, she became pregnant again and gave birth to a son. So now we have son number three. She said, now this time my husband will be attached, Yilavet, to me, for I have borne him three sons, which is exactly one quarter of the 12 tribes. Therefore they named him, or God named him, he named him Levi. Right? Yilavet means attached. She said, well, now that I have three sons, now for sure my husband is going to be attached to me, Yilavet, Levi, and so she names him Levi. But she doesn't stop there. Verse 35, and she became pregnant again and gave birth to a fourth son. She said, this time I will thank Odeh, God, because I have had more than my quarter share of the 12 tribes. Therefore, she named him Yehuda. Let me explain. She knew prophetically that Jacob was going to have children from four different wives, or four different mothers, if you will, of the children. Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah. And how did they know that? They knew it. So if you have 12, and they knew that there were going to be 12 sons. So if you do 12 divided by 4, how much is that?
Three
each. So when she had her third son, she said, good. So now I have my, I don't know, quota. Quota is a weird word. But now I have my amount. A quota. I have my amount. This is my full amount. And now my husband will be attached to me. But when she had number four, she said, wow, this is more than I expected. She says, now I really should be grateful and thankful to Hashem for giving me more than I expected. And this is the concept of, this is the meaning of the name Yehuda. What does Yehuda mean? Yehuda is related to the word Odeh, or Modeh, like Modeani. Or hodu, modim, means that we give thanks and appreciation. But what it means specifically is, it's a gratitude that comes from this, from a sense of unworthiness. Like, I was only deserving of three. You gave me four. I don't even know what to say. I'm so grateful. I didn't even expect it. Thank you so much. It's the gratitude of no expectation. There's a difference when you're expecting it, and you get it, and you still say thank you, but you really expected it all along. So you're, thank you very much, but really, I deserved it. But then there's the thank you and the gratitude when you don't feel like you deserved it, and it's above and beyond. When she had her fourth kid, really expressing her gratitude. By the way, this fourth son, which is the gratitude that's above and beyond what was expected, that is Judah, that is Yehuda. And that's where Yehudim, Jew, the name Jew comes from, this fourth tribe, this fourth son. Which the message for you and I, you know what it is, a powerful message. The message is that as Jews, what is our nature? We should have, not we should have no expectations, but we should have wonder for all of the blessings that we have. And feel like, you know what? We don't deserve it. We have no expectations. I deserve it. I expect to wake up today. Expect. Who has expectations? Why should we have an expectation? The fact that we woke up this morning is a blessing that God did not have to do. God did it. we should be over the moon excited. That's how we should live our lives, with an astonishment in a good way, and a gratitude and a wonder for life itself and life's blessings. It's a beautiful perspective. So we should have in life, based on our name and our identity, Jew, right? We should have perspective number four, perspective of son number four, which is this overwhelming gratitude. The Torah then continues to say, the end of verse 35, then she stopped having children. I'm sorry, I don't know if I read verse 35 totally. She became pregnant again and gave birth to a son. She said, this time I will thank Odegad because, oh, I read this, because I have more than my quarter share of 12 tribes. Therefore, she named him Yehuda, Judah. Then she stopped having children. All right, let's move on to Genesis chapter 30, verse number 1. Now, in the meantime, what about Rachel? And Rachel saw that she had not borne Yaakov children. And Rachel was jealous of her sister. So she said to Jacob, give me children through prayer or whatever. Otherwise, I am like I am dead. I am as good as dead. Now that's very harsh. That's very strong. She says to her husband, give me children. If not, it's like I'm dead. This is the only time we find that Jacob gets upset, gets angry at his wife. Jacob became angry with Rachel. Yaakov became angry with Rachel. He said, am I in place of God who has withheld the fruit of the womb from you? He said, you're telling me that I should give you a child. Oh, I have divine powers? I'm God? She's frustrated because her sister's now having four kids and she can't. So she expresses her frustration. Jacob gets frustrated at her for her frustration. This is what we call a bit of a tense conversation. Tense domestic conversation. Right? We got a domestic here. Chapter 30 in Genesis. So she said, okay, let's be proactive here. Let's be problem solving oriented. She said, here is my maid Bilhah. Come to her. She will bear children whom I will raise, so that I too will be built up from her. Okay, so she said, look, if I can't have children and I want children, so next best thing, I'll give you my handmaid, Bilhah, be with her, and when she gives birth, basically a surrogate mother, and have my children through this surrogate. So she gave him her maidservant Bilhah for a wife, and Jacob came to her. All right, verse number 5. Well, wouldn't you know it, Bilhah became pregnant. And she gave birth to a son for Jacob. Rachel said, God has judged me, page 195, God has judged me, Danani, and acquitted me. He has also listened to my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she named him Dan. So again, why does she name him Dan? Basically, God has judged me, and God has deemed me worthy of a son through my maidservant, and therefore she names him Dan, which is related to the word din, which is judgment. Verse number 7. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid Bilhah, became pregnant again for a second time and gave birth to a second son for Jacob. Rachel said, I have stubbornly offered my torturous prayers, Naphtuli, to God, and my prayers were accepted as with my sister. I too have become successful, and she named him Naphtali, which is related to the word prayer. It's related to the word prayer. Divine prayer and divine connection, Naphtuli, Naphtali. Naftule elikim niftalti. All right, she used a double expression. She names his son Naftali. So her sister, just to keep the score here, her sister has four boys. Through her maidservant, she now has two boys. Let's continue. Verse 9. When Leah saw that she herself had stopped having children, so she also took her maidservant Zilpah, not Bilhah, she took Zilpah and gave her to Jacob for a wife, or at least for a surrogate wife. Leah's maid Zilpah gave birth to a son for Yaakov for Jacob. Verse 11, Leah said, good fortune, God has come. So she named him God. Leah's maid Zilpah gave birth to a second son for Jacob. Leah said, I am praised, Ashri, because women now praise me. Why do women now praise her? She had four of her own and two from the maidservant, which means she had six of the 12 tribes. She's 50%. So she says, that's quite the praise. So she names him Usher. Usher meaning praise. All right, so we have now the birth of how many of the children? I think we have 8. We have 4 from Leah, 2 from Bilhah, and 2 from Zilpah. Right, that's 4 plus 2 plus 2, and that's 8 total. Make sense so far? Yes? Okay.
Rabbi,
yes.
When did they get the nomenclature of 12 tribes? I mean, because there were children before, so why are these the tribes?
There are 12 children, but each one represents their own individual path and their own individual identity. And when they have children, each one will form a path. When does that happen? It happens as they mature and as they get older and have their own kids.
No, but why is Jacob the one who is the beginning of the 12 tribes?
Excellent. So we have 3 patriarchs. Each of them represents kind of a general form of avodah service, one chesed, one gvura, one teferet. And then you have 12 different individual pathways. The way we discover that they're individual pathways is by the meaning laden in their names. We don't find by the patriarchs that Abraham was called Abraham. We don't find the naming significance. Even Isaac and Jacob, we have a little bit about the name, but not a lot of detail about the name. So the fact that we have a lot of detail about the name of the 12 tribes indicates to us that these are individual pathways. And indeed, before Jacob passes away, he blesses his sons and he gives them kind of like individual blessings for each of them. Whereas we find by Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they were all in one continuum, kind of like general. The 12 sons form 12 unique pathways that we call the 12 tribes. All right, but it's a good question. Yeah?
Was Don's mother African? Because the reason I ask is I've heard that the Ethiopian Jews are derived from the tribe of Dan.
Any Ethiopian Jews are going to be derived from when the tribes in Israel were exiled to Ethiopia. It's not that they came from Ethiopia. Are you with me on what I'm saying?
But they're not white, they're black. That's what I was asking.
1 second. Again, let me say it again. Any Ethiopian Jews are individuals who originated from Israel and then moved to Ethiopia, not the other way around.
From Egypt.
Not from Egypt.
I mean, they were slaves.
1 second. That exile happened to the northern kingdom in the times of the first temple from the land of Israel. The Jews were in Egypt, then they left Egypt. They ended up in Israel. They lived there for hundreds of years. At a certain point, Nebuchadnezzar and Sennacherib, whatever, different kings of Babylonia, exiled the 10 northern tribes and scattered them around the world, or around the region. Some Jews, allegedly, I don't know, I wasn't there, ended up possibly in Egypt. And that's the way it's been for thousands of years. That's after the fact, that's not before the fact. Does that make sense what I'm saying? No.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that if her maidservant were of African descent.
No. The African connection happens 1,000 years later, not at the beginning, 1,000 years later. That's what I'm saying. We got to get a big timeline and a chart here, right?
Whiteboard.
Right. Take my word for it, anything, an Ethiopian Jew is not originating from Jacob's family. It's originating from the 10 lost tribes that happened 1,000 years later.
Right, but it still is the tribe of Dan, which persisted after Dan's birth.
If Dan was exiled 1,000 years later, it's not Dan born right here.
No, I know, I'm saying the tribe of Dan, yeah. In other words, but if they were all of African descent, because that began with Dan, because his mother was of African descent.
His mother was not of African descent. His mother was living in Haran. She was the maidservant. She was not from African descent. If the tribe of Dan ultimately resettled in Ethiopia, that happened way after the fellow named Dan was born from his mother. Hope that makes sense. Okay, 4th reading. All right. It's getting very late. Well, let's try to run through some more text because this is today's reading. All right, I'm going to read. Here we go, chapter 30, verse 14. In the days of the wheat harvest, Reuben went and found jasmine plants or dudaim. Dudaim, either jasmine or mandrakes. Honestly, I wouldn't know jasmine or mandrake if it hit me in the head. So, it's in the Hebrew, it's called dudaim. What does it mean? Ich weiß nicht. That's Yiddish for I have no idea. So again, depending on your translation, that's what you got. So I'm going to read from this Chumash.
Rashi says Jasmine.
Rashi says Jasmine. There you go. Jasmine, if I'm not mistaken, was in one of the Disney movies, some sort of princess, but I'm assuming that it's not that, whatever. In the days of the wheat harvest, Reuben went and found jasmine plants in the field, and he brought them to Leah, his mother. He was the firstborn of Leah, the firstborn to Jacob. He brings these plants to his mother. Rachel said to Leah, her sister, please give me some of your son's jasmine plants. Reuben was a five-year-old boy. He was a young kid. He finds these beautiful jasmine plants. He brings them to his mom like kids do sometimes. You know, they bring little things and plants from the Beltline or whatever. No, don't take stuff from the Beltline. Maybe it's protected. I don't know what it is or not. Anyway, he brings them to his mother. And now the sister, Rachel, says, oh, I like those. Can I have them? Wow. Next domestic. 15. Isn't it enough that you've taken away my husband? Leah said to Rachel. You also want to take my son's jasmine plants? Ouchie, ouchie. Not a good idea. This is why the Torah says not to marry two sisters. This is why this is not a good idea. I know Jacob wanted to be a mensch, but honestly, he's putting everybody in a very, very difficult situation. It's difficult in general, in the best of times, to have two wives. I'm not saying this from personal experience. I'm just saying from my imagination of what that might look like, let alone if they are sisters. You're literally pitting people against each other. So again, Rachel says to Leah, who got jasmine plants from her son, her little boy, Reuben, says, can I have some of those? You took my husband. You also want to take my jasmine plants? So here we go. Take a look. Rachel said, let's make a deal. In that case, Jacob can sleep with you tonight instead of me as payment for your son's jasmine plants. Apparently, these jasmine plants were in very high demand. So give me the jasmine plants. Yes, I really want the jasmine plants. And I know you're upset about me taking your husband and your jasmine plants, but tonight he's supposed to be with me in the rotation. He can be with you. You see what's going on here? It's complicated. Can we just use I think the basic phrase that we can use is, by the way, why was she so interested in the jasmine plants or the dudaim? According to commentaries, it was a fertility plant. And so she wanted that to have her own children. So she was really, she said, look, he'll be with you tonight. Fine, but I have the jasmine plants. I'm in a good place. All right. Next, let's continue.
Rashi has a comment on that.
Yeah, but quickly, because we got to run through text very quickly.
Very quickly, he says that the exchange is since she belittled the lying of the righteous one. In other words,
yeah.
That's actually pain.
She didn't end up next to him.
Privilege to be buried.
Yeah, because she traded away her night with Jacob for the jasmine plants, so she ended up not being buried next to him. Okay, that's one commentary. Let's continue. 16, verse 16. So when Jacob came from the field that evening, Leah came out toward him. Now he's probably wondering, I got to check my schedule here. Like the quarterbacks, they have that little, the wristband, you know, like, let me check my calendar here. But I don't think, she said, no, you can come to me tonight because I have paid a fee for you to Rachel with my son's jasmine plants. In other words, I already made a deal, so I get you tonight. And he slept with her on that night. All right, well, after all of this, verse 17, God listened to Leah. She became pregnant for the fifth time and gave birth to a fifth son for Jacob. And Leah said, God has given me my reward because I've given my mate to my husband. So she named him Yisachar, which means reward. It is definitely a party in the USA. All right, so basically, that's the fifth son and called Yisachar. Issachar. I don't know how to pronounce it in English. I'm not even going to try. Next, verse 19. Leah became pregnant again, number 6, and she gave birth to a sixth son for Jacob. Leah said, God has given me a good portion, Zevet. This time my husband will live with me more than his other wives, for I have borne him 6 sons, as many as all the other wives put together will produce. Oh, now she has 6, not before. Oh, before she had 6 total, with including her maidservant. Now she has 6 on her own. I misspoke before. So now she has 6. that she has given birth to, which is exactly half of the 12. So she calls him Zeved, good portion, Zebulun, Zevulun. She named him Zevulun. All right, verse 21. Afterwards, she bore a daughter, and she named her Dinah. What's with the daughter? So the commentaries explain that she actually was going to have a son. When she got pregnant, it could have been a son, but she davened, she prayed that it be a girl, because she knew that if she had seven, there are already four other boys from the two maidservants, two and two. So if she had seven boys, plus two, that's 11. That means her sister Rachel would only have one, which is even less than the maidservants. So she davened, she prayed that her seventh pregnancy should be a girl. That was her self-judgment, Dinah. And it was a girl, and so she named her Dinah. Right, but ultimately, you're saying that she was not necessarily feeling compassion for her sister, but on some level she was. I'll tell you this, it's very important to remember that this is life. And in life, it's not, people are rarely, or black and white. You know, we get angry, but we still can love at the same time. We might feel jealous, but we still have compassion. So yes, there were tensions with her sister. She still loved her. She still cared about her. She still had a sensitivity. So just because they had a harsh conversation, and just because or whatever, it doesn't mean that therefore she's like, yeah, let my sister only have one kid. God forbid. But again, I'm not telling you anything special about, think about our own relationships, right? Relationships are nuanced. It's rarely black and white. Like, I'm unhappy and I completely wish that person, God forbid, only negativity. I mean, that's very, very harsh and very rare, especially with a sister. So, so she loves her sister and she didn't want her sister to be hurt, ultimately. So she prayed that it should be a girl, and it was, Dinah. Verse 22, finally, God remembered Rachel, I'm going to skip the parentheses here, and God listened to her and opened her womb. Verse 23, she became pregnant. 197, she became pregnant. Finally, Rachel became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She said, God has concealed my disgrace. She named him Yosef, saying, may God add Yosef another son for me. So she names her son, may I have another son. Yosef means another one. So she names her first son, I want another son, a second son. And that's a beautiful, huh? Very smart, right? And so that is also a beautiful way to pray, which is, I appreciate what I have, but I'm also looking for more. When it comes to serving Hashem, we always look for more. Always Yosef, always increasing. And finally, we have this epic idea, this epic teaching. In verse 25, when Rachel had given birth to Joseph, Yosef, so Yaakov said to Laban, his father-in-law, at this point, send me away, and I will go back to my place and my land back home. Let me have my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and I will go, for you are aware of my services, which I have carried out for you. Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have found out by divining that God has blessed me because of you. And that's how the fourth reading ends. So I just want to explain what happened. Jacob always loved Rachel. And when Rachel finally had her first son, Joseph, he says, okay, now I have my son from Rachel. Now I'm ready to go back home and encounter Esau. The idea here is that he knows that Joseph is going to be of the spiritual character that he'll need to fight or to contend with his twin brother Esau on a spiritual level. We don't have time to get into that right now. Maybe I'll start with that in our next session of DPP. But either way, at this point, with birth number 11, not with all 12, with number 11, he says, ready to leave. But Laban, his father-in-law, is not ready for him to leave. His father-in-law and uncle. This is South Haran, I'm kidding. So his father-in-law says to him, his uncle says to him, don't leave. I know that I'm blessed because of you and I want you to stay because the business is going great with the animals. And we'll see as the story continues how they make a deal to stay on now, not for any more wives or any more, and it's not about family, it's about simply about business and making a business arrangement. And we find how, we will read about how Laban tries to deceive Jacob throughout and how Jacob has to contend with deception in the family. All right, so that is Daily Power Parsha for today. That's the story of the birth of 11 out of 12 sons, 12 children, including Dinah. and the stories behind the four mothers of the 12 tribes. Any questions, comments? Joy, all good? Make sense? Yes? Charna, Matt, all good? All right. Unmute if you want to jump in, otherwise. Awesome. Okay, good. Awesome, awesome. Good. Shabbat Shalom. Yes, so a quick announcement. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving, we're off tomorrow for DPP. We're back on Friday. Erev Shabbat, we'll do the rest of the portion on Friday, which is going to be readings number, we got a lot of readings, 5, 6, and 7 we'll cover on Friday for our Erev Shabbos get together at 12 o'clock. All right, we'll see you all then. Take care.
Rabbi, there was a show on HBO, it was called Big Love, and it was based in Mormon community in Nevada, and it was exactly this story about a man juggling